Welcome to another episode of Conduct Detrimental. I am Dan Lust. I am joined this week by Jason Morin. What's up, Jason?
Not much, Dan. How's it going?
It's good. It's good. I feel like every week we just have something new and different that pops up in the world of sports. So we have obviously a story that we've been covering for a couple months. I think we'll take credit. We've said it a couple times on this podcast. We were the first on the scent that there was a brewing sports law dispute with the Cleveland Guardians roller derby team and the baseball team, and a bittersweet end with the teams agreeing to settle their differences and move forward as both the Cleveland Guardians. So, Jason, I know you, I've said it before, you obviously run, you know, the blog submissions on our site. You know, the Cleveland Guardians, the story was pretty good for us traffic-wise, pretty good for us contributor-wise.
Yeah, I mean, you're even being modest with the kind of the claim to the beginning of the story and just pinpointing there might be a legal claim there for the roller derby team. I mean, you know, no one had really even noticed that there existed another Cleveland Guardians in the fold there. And you kind of, you know, alluded to the fact that there could be a legal claim and they may not have searched the team name and the trademark office. So you've been on this since day one. We've had a bunch of writers put out stories. And like you said, all of them were buzzing with traffic. And some of our most read articles have come from this Guardians dispute.
Not that I'm meaning to toot my own horn, but I think it's an important lesson. Like, don't assume that the multi-billion dollar company knows what the F they're doing. I think it's just a very good lesson. And like, people make mistakes. So whether they want to admit to it or not, and I'm sure they will never admit to it. They will never tell us the exact amount of money that this case was settled for. You know, I think it's fair to acknowledge that this settlement was probably for maybe an additional zero or two than they could have settled it had they done it the right way. Before we get into it, we have a guest today, Professor Tonya Ilyakasas. I want to thank our sponsors, Themis Bar Review. I had a panel, Jason, which I know you attended on Friday with Themis Bar Review. We had like hundreds of people in attendance talking about sports law. So Themis was so happy with the turnout for that event. They're offering a special code to our listeners. So as of today, you are getting a very special discount if you register for Themis through us. So Themis, as we've told you, is the best bar prep company ever that's ever been created. If you go to themisbar.com/condetrimental and you input all of your information, you will basically get $1,000 off of Themis's normal price. So special discount code just for our listeners. I know a lot of you have already signed up, but we have a good relationship with Themis and decided to reward listeners of this podcast with a massive, massive discount code. Okay, so again, themisbar.com/condetrimental.
Jason, how much did you say was off on the discount?
$1,000.
I want to make sure I heard that correctly. Wow.
$1,000. Normally $2,500. You'll get it for about $1,500. So $1,000.
Awesome.
Jason, for this episode, we have a good friend of mine on, Tony Ilyakasas, who I know you know very well from social media. You know, this is a story. We spent a lot of time on the St. Louis Rams stuff. We spent a lot of time with Washington football team. I know Dan and I are going to talk about the John Gruden lawsuit this week. But what's the constant theme? It's really big companies, be it teams or owners or whoever you want, being held accountable for making mistakes. And everyone makes mistakes, right? I think we're better as a society when we can, you know, learn from the mistakes that we made. This story, the Cleveland Guardians story, sure, it's kind of a niche story and who's it important for? It's important for lawyers, law students, but it's really important for any fan of any team. Somebody said this to me on Instagram the other day. I just love it. It's like, this is the story of like the biggest flex that a semi-professional team has ever made on a professional team in the history of anything. So we spend a lot of time talking about the St. Louis lawsuit, how St. Louis, the city, is flexing on the NFL, which 100% they are. John Gruden, to some extent, is trying to flex on the NFL. We'll see how successful that'll be. But this is a roller derby team making a baseball team, a billion-dollar baseball team, look like, for lack of a better term, idiots, right? Like just really, really dumb. And I'm sure these are really high-priced lawyers and really fancy lawyers that went to fancy law schools that are running the Indians baseball legal operation, but just like a calamity, just like a comedy of errors. High level stuff, Jason. What do you think about this dispute before we give it over to our guest?
Yeah, I've always just thought from the beginning, there's probably two realities that are possible here. And one is that, and I think it's the one that you believe in, is that the Cleveland Indians Guardians legal team had just pure oversight, that they didn't even check, didn't even Google the name, and just was a complete legal mistake, which is, you know, very possible. If you're a educated and well-versed attorney, you do your due diligence. You don't miss that kind of thing. Or there's the other possibility, which is just like a deliberate lack of care, that they researched it, saw the Guardians trademark, saw this and that, and just didn't really think they were a threat. So I've always debated in my head, which is the reality here? You know, all we know is that it cost them. Whichever way it went, it's cost them a lot of money. So this has been fascinating to watch.
Yeah, settlement terms were not disclosed. We certainly get into it with Tony. We'll save our comments for the end, but Tony is going to join us, as well as Emily Costanzo, who runs our Instagram account. Decided to ramp up our efforts over there, so we wanted to reward Emily by giving her some time on the podcast. She's done a fantastic job. She's a law student over at Quinnipiac. Tony is a professor at New York Law School with me. He's the entertainment and IP professor, and you want to give Tony a follow on Instagram or his various channels, because Tony, you know, just like we cover sports and law, Tony covers all things IP. Sometimes it happens to be law, but it just makes you a smarter person. That said, let's kick it over to Professor Tony Iliakostas on the Cleveland Guardians lawsuit. Tony, Professor Iliakostas, welcome to Conduct Detrimental, my friend. How are you?
Professor Lust, it's very nice to see you. I feel like you should have intro'd me as Tony, the NCAA is a cartel, Iliakostas, in light of you name drop me in a previous podcast.
I didn't just name drop you. I think I outed you because people that were reporting.
All right. Is that how it goes?
Guy on the panel that went after the NCAA. Who was that guy, that past crusader? Professor T.
Underdog.
We should mention for podcast purposes, we are joined by our Instagram coordinator, Emily Costanzo. What's up, Emily?
Not too much, Dan. How are you?
Emily, certainly I've appreciated all of the your shenanigans on Instagram account with some Squid Games memes, some TikTok stuff, which I am too old to really follow what's going on, but like certainly the kids appreciate it. And we've been hearing some good news that people join the new Instagram account at Condetrimental. So I wanted to bring you on. I know this is a topic that's been near and dear to our show. It was really our first series of viral articles on our website. So certainly a story near and dear to us. So I wanted to bring on Emily, one of our team members, as well as Tony, who in addition to being at the IP professor on Instagram, he's a fellow professor, a colleague of mine at New York Law School. He's the IP and entertainment law professor. So I'm the sports law professor. Between the two of us, we have the trifecta of IP, sports, entertainment. So I don't know, it's a fun story. So Tony, obviously we're having you on today. The news is that obviously the Cleveland Guardians lawsuit is no more. There has been a settlement. So I think it's probably good. We got to look at the ashes of this lawsuit. We got to do some dissection. We got to do an autopsy, figure out how this lawsuit came to be, a lawsuit that I never think should have happened. I'm happy that it did. And a settlement, we'll figure out how much, you know, you and I, I'm sure, have our guess as to how much money was involved. But let me hand it to you, Tony. Before we do a deep dive, we talk about the history, we talk about the lawsuit, we talk about the settlement. Give me your overall thoughts on the Cleveland Guardians dispute.
It definitely is a great case study for how you just have to do good research. A little goes a long way. And I think that, albeit that this, you know, and it was a fairly short trademark infringement dispute, much like you, I feel relieved that, you know, there was a settlement after, you know, such a short period of time, and that two Cleveland Guardians teams can exist, can coexist. But like I said, incredible case study for how doing a little legal research goes a long way. Certainly having a more formidable marketing plan would do it better justice. You know, I think this is going to be one for the ages. I think this is really going to be like in every single sports law casebook, any IP casebook, things of that sort.
I tend to agree with you, Emily. I know you have some strong thoughts, some strong opinions. Certainly, we agreed to do this podcast before we heard news of the settlement. And you said something along the lines to me like, how did these idiots at Cleveland Baseball HQ allow this to happen? So I'll give you the floor before we do a history, but the floor is yours. You know, go to town on the Indians. Totally fine.
Absolutely. See, the thing is, I'm not sure I used the word idiots, but I might have as a Yankees fan. So that actually might be true. I guess, Tony, what the thing I can't understand is, how do we have a billion-dollar organization in the Cleveland Indians and or Guardians? And the fact that their general counsel, with his buku buck salary, how is he not able to locate this? The fact that this is already in use, that there's already a team in his same city with this same name.
Initially, I thought, you know, maybe this was just an honest mistake. You know, things happen, right? I mean, you think that you're doing everything right by going to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office website. You do a trademark electronic search, system search, you search Cleveland Guardians, you try to do all the research, things of that sort. And maybe he just genuinely thought that they were just doing the job like what anybody is trained to do when you're doing a trademark search. You know, the problem is that, you know, there has to come a point where you have to be book savvy, but also street savvy. So the street savvy part of it, I think, is where the Cleveland Indians failed. They didn't do a Google search. Although interestingly, in the complaint, it does indicate that the Cleveland Guardians roller derby team had registered the trademark with the state of Ohio since 2017. So it's not like they didn't know anything about it.
I want you to hold that thought because I think this is important for the history. So Tony, I'm going to set you up. You're the expert here. Namely, you and I are essentially the fans trying to figure out how this debacle occurred. So I'm just a brief history. I think that 2017 date is a very important date in this history. So, okay, let's start here. The Cleveland Guardians roller derby team. The reports kind of vary, but I think by all indications, this team starts to exist under that name with the logo that we know, that green color scheme, right around 2013, 2014, 2015. And in that range, you know, they have a certain amount of seasons. I've spoke to people associated with the roller derby team. It is present in their complaint that they were operating in some type of commercial endeavor. Maybe, I'm not sure how much money they were making, but they were selling shirts. They were selling merchandise. So they had put that name into commercial use for some period of time, years, we'll say. So 2017, the next date you need to know about, Tony mentions they register that mark, which I'll give it to Tony to explain a little bit more, but they register the name within the state of Ohio. So they have some type of public filing. If you're a law student, right, we take property. There is a lot of disputes we'll hear in our property class about, hey, did you register your acquisition of that property? Did you record it? So there was some paper trail beyond just Google, some legal paper trail that the team did exist. Okay, don't worry about the Guardians anymore, but the team played for a couple of years. They register, they have their name, they, you know, have some type of formal filing with the state of Ohio. Okay, so fast forward. When does Cleveland baseball, we start to worry about them? So the Cleveland Indians have existed as the Indians for, you know, decades and, you know, a long time. We've always known them as the Indians. During the pandemic, as people will know, there was a movement, and I think an important one, to start ridding sports of these names that were, you know, offensive. So be it Washington football team, Cleveland Indians, maybe there are some more on the horizon, be it the Kansas City Chiefs, Chicago Blackhawks, you know, Edmonton Eskimos were that was a name that was removed from the CFL. We started having this movement. So in December of 2020, the Indians make an announcement that says we are going to be changing our name at some point in the future, but we have heard you. We are going to make some formal name change. So I'm going to try to do this chronologically as best as I can. But there is at that point, which we saw in the Washington football situation, there is a squatter, we'll call him a squatter, someone that has no affiliation to a baseball team, to the roller derby team. He takes a wild guess. And he registers, some just random guy in New York, registers a trademark or files a trademark for the name Cleveland Guardians. Yeah, no affiliation, as far as we know, to any sports entity. Just takes a wild swing, as many did, to try to figure out the Cleveland name. And he actually, you know, lands on a name that obviously comes into fruition a couple months down the road. So that's December of 2020. We see that in the USPTO. That's the date of that filing. So fast forward, January, February, April. I'm going to stop on April for a second. Major League Baseball, and this is a story that's now come out in hindsight, but the Cleveland Indians, I guess, make their selection of the Cleveland Guardians, and they make and they have a trademark filing in a country in Africa called Mauritius, and they file this trademark filing. Tony, I'm going to give it to you, and we'll go into more of the history, but they make this decision, and they make this trademark filing in Mauritius, which no one knows about. No one knows about this filing for a couple months, but they did it very purposefully. So Tony, we'll take a break in the chronology. Let me hand it to you. Why on earth do the Cleveland Indians file a trademark filing for quote-unquote Cleveland Guardians in a country in Africa? A little shady to me.
It is shady. I couldn't agree more. Part of me feels like they didn't want the word out at all. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the whole Washington football team trademark debacle as well, where I'm blanking on the guy's name, but he basically has already registered trademarks that are associated with potential names for Washington football team. Like
Martin McCauley. He's a
Martin McCauley. Yes.
A legendary trademark spotter.
And he's registered, you know, Washington Redhawks, Washington Tuskegee Airmen, all these potential names. And has provided specimen showing that he already is using it in commerce. He basically has like these Zazzle-esque shops set up where you can do print on demand of cups, shirts, hoodies, whatever you want of these team names that he's registered with the copyright office or the trademark office rather. And so he, you know, has shown every way intent of using it and it satisfied it. So my only impression could be that to file a trademark in Mauritius, which I've never heard of until I read the complaint. So part of me can only infer that, you know, they're trying to keep it super secret and they at least wanted to establish that the mark is being used in some type of jurisdiction. Maybe if they had registered with, let's say, the EU IPO, the European Union Intellectual Property Office, or even with UK's Intellectual Property Office or somewhere else that has a more prominent intellectual property presence, maybe word would have gotten out faster. But part of me kind of feels that that was the main strategy.
I think it's been well documented. At least people were trying to speculate as to why you filed in Mauritius in particular. My understanding, again, I'm not the IP lawyer here, but there is some level of, we'll say, look back privilege. So if you file in Mauritius in April, I think we had Josh Gerben on our podcast, you know, a couple of months ago, whenever this news broke, but that he explained that you basically had 6 months to file the trademark or to finalize the trademark. So if you filed in Mauritius in April, as long as you made the announcement sometime in those next 6 months, you were okay. But it allowed you, as we know in trademark law, you know, the first to file is given some sort of priority. It's obviously not the be all end all, which we'll get in here, but you know, it's a reason. So baseball essentially keeps this under wraps. No one knows anything about that. They have this indication, pick the Guardians. They file in Mauritius. If we want to, you know, take Josh Gerben's word for it, the Mauritius allows you the 6 month look back time. So you have really until October to actually make this announcement. So Indians, as we know, we've since played out the baseball season. They didn't have the best of years, a season maybe to forget about. On a random July 23rd, the Cleveland Indians announced, hey, we've picked our name. We're ready to tell you it's Cleveland Guardians, which I'm not from Cleveland. I guess it's some type of bridge statue, which no one, I can tell you,
yeah,
no one is thrilled with this name by any means. Tom Hanks dressing up the announcement is not going to change anything. No one really likes it. But fast forward, right? Okay, so they pick the name, right? You, Tony, you and I don't really care if they pick a name. Well, congrats, they picked a name. If anything, the story was Cleveland picked a name quicker than Washington, who announced, Washington football team announced earlier than the Indians that they were going to figure out a new name. But whatever, that's the story. So over that weekend, as everyone knows at this point, ClevelandGuardians.com starts to get some activity, you know, and then there's the at Cleveland Guardians Instagram account. There's Facebook.com/Cleveland Guardians. And people all of a sudden realize, like, hey, there's another Cleveland Guardians. Like, what is going on? So our podcast will take a little bit of credit. I think, you know, we have a bunch of litigators that come on the show that contribute to our website. I think we were all of the consensus, at least over at Conduct Detrimental HQ, that someone that would have settled with Cleveland Indians would not be allowed to be posting on social media, right? It just wouldn't make sense. So either there is no settlement agreement or there is some type of a settlement agreement, but the roller derby team is violating it. And you know, but that didn't really make sense. So, you know, what we have at this point, we have Cleveland baseball that has filed an actual trademark. At this point, the Cleveland Guardian roller derby team has not filed any sort of trademark. But Tony, I'll kick it to you at this point. On July 23rd, where do we stand in terms of trademark status, right? Like, how do you view this on July 23rd? Because I have some thoughts as to negotiation and leverage of settlement, but where do we stand legally on July 23rd?
July 23rd was clearly the day that the Cleveland baseball team made it abundantly clear that their name was going to be the Guardians moving forward. And I ironically did a video that day for my Instagram account, The IP Professor, follow if you're not following. But on that day, I did research, and sure enough, there is an active application in the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for Cleveland Guardians baseball. And you know, anybody who has studied trademark, if you're a student and you're studying intellectual property or trademark law, you probably have heard this from your respective professors. But if you haven't, when you file a trademark, part of the requirement of filling out an application is you have to not only provide what word or design you're registering, but now you have to lay out, okay, what type of good or service are you providing? Because you can't just, the premise of a trademark is that it serves as a source identifier for goods or services. So Nike is a brand that I source identifies athletic wear. You know, Starbucks is a brand that identifies quick service restaurant with respect to coffee. So in the same way, Cleveland Guardians has to identify some type of good or service. And in this case, it's baseball related activities. And that's exactly how it's defined in the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. So, you know, like we've said, by the book, it seems like they've done everything, because there were no other active Cleveland baseball, Cleveland Guardians marks at that time on July 23rd.
We did have the squatter, though. I will say that we had the squatter who
filed the squatter. We're putting aside the squatter, right? Exactly, right. But yeah, Beyond that, there was no other evidence, at least at the time. You know, to tease what we're going to talk about in the future, there was no active mark that was related to the roller derby team. So it's kind of important to make that clear, because even though there wasn't anything in the federal trademark office with the USPTO, there was an active trademark registration with the state of Ohio.
So I think, you know, I'll zoom through the chronology, because I want to get to the complaint, but that's really kind of chapter one. So that's Cleveland baseball makes an announcement that we are going to be the Guardians. And at this point, maybe at least if you ask their lawyers, I'm sure they felt, and I remember seeing comments at the time, hey, we've done our due diligence. We got final clearance for the name. We spoke to the XFL's Guardians. We spoke to the Guardians of the Galaxy. We're good to go. Like, and I'm like, well,
Guardians of the Galaxy.
that was a real story. And then, you know, at that point, we didn't know if they Googled the name or not. And then they said in hindsight, yeah, we Googled it. We knew that the roller derby team existed, but I don't know if I necessarily believe them, but you know, either they knew the roller derby team existed and they decided to proceed anyway, or they didn't know the roller derby team existed. I don't really know which one's worse. But
although interestingly, in the complaint, it does mention a very subtle part of the complaint does mention that there was correspondence between the general counsel or one of the legal people in Cleveland baseball team with Cleveland Guardians roller derby team asking for how they were using the mark Guardians. And so they provide basically the whole portfolio of the marks, the G with the Cleveland Guardians name, the mascot itself, which is a, you know, side of the Cleveland Guardians statue. And, you know, they had that sample. So we do have evidence of some type of confusion between during that time period.
I'll jump to this part. And Tony, you're right. I want to make sure we give our own section to the complaint, which is why I think we have a settlement. But Tony, you're 100% right. Behind the scenes, Cleveland baseball did reach out to the Cleveland Guardians roller derby team. So, you know, whether this whole Google situation is, it was a fun debate that we had, and I'm still not really sure, you know, it seems like we have them talking out of both sides of their mouth, but Cleveland baseball reaches out to Cleveland Guardians some point before July 23rd. And Cleveland Guardians, I guess, send them all their mock-ups, all their designs. So Cleveland roller derby was a little bit upset that the logos they actually come out with very closely resemble the logos that they sent them prior to July 23rd. So put a pin in that, but just know for our purposes, baseball and roller derby are talking before July 23rd, and they keep talking up until the end of October. So what happens between July 23rd and I think it's October 26th, right around there, about a 3-month period. Number one, conduct detrimental gets on the source, and we start, you know, looking at every single piece of nook and cranny of evidence we can find. Within a couple of days of Cleveland baseball's announcement, Cleveland Guardians roller derby files a trademark, and they say, you know what? We're not going away here. We filed a trademark. We, you know, and they're not making any public comment, but they kind of do by instance of making a public filing. The Cleveland Guardians roller derby team starts posting a little bit more. They say, you know, we're recruiting for the upcoming season. They say we have merch on our website, which was a fun story that we had into August. Yours truly bought a t-shirt to support the cause, obviously. We keep going, right? And Cleveland baseball, they have they put out a media tour and they go, there's no issue with the trademark. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, that's a direct response to our coverage, because we're the only, you know, jabronis out here that want to go out on a limb and say, like, there's certainly an issue. There's certainly something going on. So fast forward, you know, they want to announce, I guess somebody asked them, when will the name be official? And they go, well, it's not, the timing is not yet right. We can't yet make it official yet. So we're like, okay, like, that's bizarre. What exactly is happening? And then there's a date, you know, November 11th that I guess retailers, we didn't know about this, but retailers had circled on their calendar for some amount of time when you can make this merchandise available. So that was going to happen on November 15th. But before we get to November 15th, we just have kind of silence. We have roller derby clearly not happy with what's going on with baseball. And I don't know, they just keep making us think. They keep selling t-shirts, people like me, and making some money. People are going to clevelandguardians.com. And I had a lot of people reach out and say, what's going on? And I go, the longer they wait, the more the price tag goes up, because just logical. So what we have on a random last week of October, we have the filing of this lawsuit. And I think that's really where we kind of get to, we'll say that was chapter two, right? Before July 23rd, after July 23rd, and now we have the lawsuit. So Emily, before we kick it to Tony, I know you've been through it. I know you have a lot of questions for Tony as to kind of the items of that complaint. What's your sense of the complaint? Obviously, we ended up getting to a settlement, but I think that was you reached out to me after you read the complaint. And I remember, again, paraphrasing, but you said, how did these idiots let it get to this point? You maybe said idiots, maybe you didn't, maybe you said morons, but a similar word.
A similar word. We'll stay on that. Yeah, I guess I can't understand how I know Tony mentioned it, and Tony, you can get into it in a minute, but the roller derby team sent the MLB organization pictures of their jersey and then turned around and said, well, we don't have any, to the best of our knowledge, no one has any right to this name. And I'm happy that they came to a settlement, but Dan, I think it's important to note that even prior to the settlement that they reached as of today, the MLB organization did offer the roller derby team a settlement, which was referred to as such a nominal amount that it was 15 minutes of their annual revenue, which, I mean, I guess puts into perspective how much money this organization is making. But Tony, in order to hop more into the complaint and to, I guess, dovetail off of what you already mentioned about that email correspondence. So what is your take on the fact that the direct quote that the Indians organization, to the best of their knowledge, had no idea as to the fact that the Guardian's name was already in the public domain? And what does that mean for a name to be in the public domain?
So for a name to be in the public domain, I guess you have to think, is it a household name that anybody can say? Like if I were to say, do you want to go get some Starbucks, or do you want to hop in an Uber, or could you go get me the Bounty? I spilled, you know, some water on the floor. Those are household names that, like, over time people have learned to accustom that name with a specific brand or type of good or service. So I guess the logical argument that one could make on that, you know, name Guardians being the public domain is that people haven't learned to acquaint Cleveland Guardians with roller derby, because it's, you know, listen, no offense to anybody who loves roller derby, but it is a fairly niche sport. It's not like basketball.
Offense taken.
Of course. It says the owner of a Cleveland Guardian shirt. But, you know, it's not a basketball team. It's not a baseball team. It's not a football team. The big teams that are in Cleveland are anything named but Guardians. So maybe that's the whole argument on the public domain front. But, you know, I still think that their whole notion of that they weren't aware of the Guardians name, I still think that, you know, while it was a knucklehead move to not do a Google search, at the very least, in addition to doing a federal trademark search, they could have done, you know, this could have all been an honest mistake. And this could have just been, you know, just an oversight of some type, who knows what type of oversight, but something that was just reckless in nature or just negligent. You know, we could dive into that a little bit more, but that's what I think.
I guess the big takeaway from the complaint, Emily mentioned, and then I'll have a question for you, Tony. I could gather, right, that they were not seeing eye to eye on numbers. We spent a lot of time on this podcast trying to figure out how much should be offered, how much the, you know, the website, Instagram handle, all those trademarks, how much all of that's worth. You know, I gather to say, right, like, they're worth a lot more with the way that this negotiation was botched. So here's, I guess, the overall point, which Emily, you've hit on, Tony's hit on, and why I don't really believe a word out of Cleveland baseball's, you know, mouth, whatever, you know, whatever you want to say it. Either they knew about the mark or they didn't know about the mark. If you want, and I believe the Cleveland Roller Derby Guardians, there was some settlement communication, or at least some form of communication prior to July 23rd. So let's say you didn't know that the roller derby team existed, right? Well, somehow you didn't know about it, whatever. You did find out about it at some point prior to making the announcement official. So
right. You
could have pivoted at that point. You could have delayed the announcement, because I've been asking people for months, what was the reason that you had to make the announcement on July 23rd? Maybe you have that October deadline with the Mauritius filing, but there's no reason to file it then. So here's the mistake that's made, right? So again, I'm not sure I believe the Indians one way or the other. They want to say it one of two ways, that they did a Google search, but they didn't do a Google search. It doesn't really matter. You decided on July 23rd, if you believe the Roller Derby Guardians, that baseball knew that the roller derby team existed, yet, you know, and hadn't settled up with them, still decided to announce the name. So Emily, you know, hit the nail on the head. I think this is the big takeaway from the complaint, that the amount offered by the Dolan family, by Cleveland baseball, I've heard it was less than 10,000. I see some people reporting 8,000. Either way, it's a nuisance level number. It's a number that is peanuts. You know, we don't know the number that roller derby team demanded, but we know that talks kind of stalled out around October, and then they felt the need to file this lawsuit. And for litigation purposes, I imagine there was some type of letter that was sent by Roller Derby HQ that said, hey, make your best and final offer, or else we're going to file this lawsuit and make you look really stupid. And, you know, I haven't seen the letter. I don't even know if the letter exists, but I imagine that's what happened. So, Tony, I'm going to give it to you with this question. And why I, you know, I guess we're jumping ahead a little bit, but it's really the only thing that happened. Post lawsuit, the only thing that happened is that we were supposed to have this big merchandise release and it got canceled. And I said, which I think was right in hindsight, that has something to do with the lawsuit. I still do feel that way. Tony, you have an Instagram account. You have a Facebook account. You have a trademark dispute, right? Because we mentioned the Roller Derby Guardians filed a trademark. I'm going to ask you later on about your sense of what the Guardians could have won. But how much do you think that this, you know, these things, the social media accounts, the website, the potential for a trademark, how much do you think this is all worth to the Cleveland baseball team?
Oh, tens of millions. That is not even up for debate, because that's a valuable name. I mean, it's the way that now they want to move forward. They're no longer Cleveland Indians. They're, you know, and They certainly don't want to register Cleveland baseball. They don't want that to be the alias. They want to let the world know that they are now the Guardians. This is like no different than when the Tampa Bay Devil Rays rebranded to the Tampa Bay Rays. And that now was the name that they're like punching into everybody's head that they want to be identified as that. So certainly those domains, those aliases carry, you know, I mean, if I had to guesstimate, maybe upwards of north of 10 mil. I mean, definitely that much.
You know, Emily and I were talking about it offline. Like I put a tweet out today, obviously, you know, I guess the news, which we'll get into. There's really two options, right, from Cleveland Indians standpoint. Either you fight this lawsuit out, right, and you go into battle, you know, in court and also at the USPTO office to fight over this trademark, or you just price yourself out and you say, you know what, I don't, well, there's a chance maybe we could lose this, so let's pay up some money. As we sit here today, obviously the case has been settled. Terms have not been disclosed. There will be two Cleveland Guardians. I'm with you, Tony, that the trademark and this battle, right, all the IP, all the websites, it's worth a ton of money. Now, is there a world, and I think I know the answers, but I'll give you the floor. Is there a world that the Cleveland Roller Derby Guardians win the various legal proceedings? And obviously, it's a hypothetical world because we're not in there anymore. Is there a world where they won those legal proceedings and they actually prevented the baseball team from using that mark? Was that something that was on the table?
Part of me as the underdog fan would think yes, but as somebody who's in academia and who is in the world of IP would want to be more cautious to say that it might depend on an assessment of consumer confusion. So basically, for anybody who isn't aware of how trademark infringement disputes work, this general thesis of a trademark infringement dispute is that you provide proof that two marks that are fairly similar could cause consumer confusion. And generally speaking, there is an 8-factor test that is used to assess consumer confusion. You look at the similarity of the marks. Are they in the same type of service? Is there any data that shows actual consumer confusion? So usually you rely on focus groups. There is even a factor that assesses if the infringing mark could get into the same space as the original mark owner. So the question then would be, would Cleveland Guardians baseball team ever enter into the roller derby space? So the question here is, one is a roller derby team, the other one's a baseball team, but they're both in the service of providing sports entertainment. There could be a scenario where the names Cleveland Guardians could cause consumer confusion, but their color schemes are different. Cleveland Guardians baseball team is skewing more towards the traditional navy blue red scheme that they've had with the Indians. Cleveland Guardians roller derby team adopts a blue and green color scheme. Even the font is different, but still, you would need to rely on those factors to help assess that. I think it could be an uphill battle that could have led to a win for the roller derby team, but there are too many variables. And frankly, case law has shown quite abundantly clear that consumer confusion is pretty much a crapshoot. And sometimes there's apparent evidence of consumer confusion and other times where it just doesn't exist whatsoever. It just happens to be a coincidence that one type of mark exists that shares the same type of name or even same type of design as another, but they don't have anything to do with the other. And for anybody who is a trademark or IP guru, check out the Starbucks Chartbucks lawsuit. That's a classic example. Two different coffee companies. One had used Charbucks as a name to identify their brand of dark roasted beans. And Starbucks thought it was a jab at their coffee and, you know, potentially a bean burp. But yeah, that's for another discussion. But go check it out. There's tons of case law that helps shed light on those consumer confusion prongs.
I think the big takeaway from your answer is if you do play this lawsuit out or you dispute over at the USPTO, your sense is that there would not have been this requisite level of confusion, right? That you actually do think that Cleveland baseball might have prevailed. That would be your opinion.
It could have. And I think even then it's very possible that even roller derby would have won. I think the problem is that there are too many variables because it's the fact that yes, one's a baseball team and one's a roller derby team, but they both happen to have the same name. And the question is, could sports fans just generally get confused, you know, when they say, oh, you know, can we go catch a Cleveland Guardians game? And you're thinking you're going to a roller derby team when in fact you're going to the baseball and you're like, what the heck is going on here?
I don't think anyone would have, this just again, I'm a fan of the roller derby team, of course. I don't think anyone was getting confused with that. But I think, let's say, Tony, obviously you have different examiners that view things a little bit differently. Obviously, judges are going to view things differently. I guess the impetus of my original question, and this is maybe a closed-ended question, and you'll see where I'm going with it. Before pre-settlement, right, what do you think the chances were that Cleveland Guardians roller derby team would have prevailed, and prevailed in such a way that would have legally prevented baseball from operating under that name.
All right. If you want to put a probability
on it, yes.
A 30% chance roller derby would have won.
See, I'm not disagreeing. So, right. Okay. So let's keep that in mind, because I think this is very important to the settlement discussion we're about to have. So 30%, 10%, whatever. There's some, you know, non-nominal number that I think people were concerned about. Emily, I'm going to ask you this as a requisite. You're a roller derby fan, the biggest roller derby fan on our website.
Huge, love me some roller derby. Yeah.
So there was an argument that I was hearing from legal scholars that baseball, in addition to this argument of confusion, was also going to try to make the argument that roller derby abandoned the mark, that they had not used it during the pandemic, that they kind of, there was no indication that they were continuing and shouldn't intend to use that mark. I'm not sure I buy that, but I'll give it to you, Emily. You know, at least from my understanding, if the trademark has been abandoned, that would have certainly lend itself to a very easy argument for the baseball team. But I'll give it to you. I mean, you know, just playing, not playing games for a year. Do you think the abandonment argument had any weight?
Yeah, I mean, I think it had minimal weight, if any. I think the problem is that the Guardians, the roller derby organization, my team, they were resting so much on the common law argument that they had a common law right to this trademark. And the basis of that claim is that we've used this for X number of years consistently. And therefore, I mean, I guess in simple terms, you should have known, or therefore it is our common law right to use this name. So I think that the baseball argument, or I guess the baseball attorneys, were smart in the sense that they're getting creative. I do think they're grasping at straws and getting that argument to have any real weight. And I think that they also, the roller derby team, could have came back, and because I think there's something in the complaint about during that time, how there were registrations still for events that they had canceled. So they could point to these things saying, hey, wait a minute. We were trying to do stuff. We were trying to, you know, have events and have fans and have whatever. You know, the world unfortunately just flipped upside down. So I think that's a losing argument any way you want to spin it.
You're not going to get a disagreement from myself or Tony on that. But I think that was an argument that people had said maybe they're going to try to say that. So Tony, I'm not going to hold you to a form. Let's say 30%. Let's use your number for all intents and purposes. Emily lays out the buzzword here, and then I'll give it to you. You know, just so people are aware, right? People say first to file usually gets some type of advantage. So maybe, right, there's a world here. Who is the first to file? The squatter. And I didn't mention this, but by all indications, the squatter withdrew his application. So he likely settled up with Cleveland baseball team in some way, shape, or form. They paid him something. He went away. We're not really sure, but the filing went away, so you can assume that the Indians cut a check to this guy. Okay, so the next trademark filing on the books is by the baseball team. And then one after the fact comes from the roller derby team. So Emily mentions this common law trademark concept. Tony, I'll explain it to you, or I'll give the floor to you to explain it. Why, if you're the roller derby's lawyer, do you feel pretty good at this point? We're on October 26th. You're the second between the Indians to file a trademark. But, you know, you read the complaint, they felt pretty strong about this common law trademark argument. So maybe explain what that is and why they felt good about it.
So a common law trademark is different from a federal trademark in the sense that whether you don't register the trademark with the federal trademark office, USPTO, or if you were to file it local to your state, trademark rights are only going to be specific to the geographic region that you are located. So that means that in 2017, when Cleveland Guardians roller derby team registered the trademark with the state of Ohio, that means that they could only enforce trademark rights within the state of Ohio. They can't take it to Illinois. They can't take it to Minnesota. They can't take it to New York. It's only in that locale of Ohio.
But it's only in Ohio, but that's where the Cleveland Indians operate. So obviously,
right. So that's where this gets interesting, because now, even though they didn't file federally, the argument that they're going to rest on is that at the very least, the Cleveland baseball team could have done an internal business search potentially within that state to see if there are any other businesses that bear the name Guardians, sports or otherwise. So just that fact alone helps, I think, if I'm in the head of the roller derby team, I think that helps bolster their argument that they're first to use in the state of Ohio in 2017, while it wasn't a federal mark, does show that they had been using the mark longer than the Cleveland Indians baseball team, and therefore, you know, rose to the level of this lawsuit. And then, of course, to bring any type of, you know, infringement claim like this, it would help to file the federal trademark. It just bolsters the case. And when you file federally with the USPTO, it does defer little things like attorney fees and so on and so forth. But, you know, obviously they responded after the fact by registering their mark and then, you know, proceeding as forth.
I guess this is my last kind of point on this, and then we'll get to the settlement, which I know you and I and Emily, we all have thoughts on it. The Twitterverse seems to have a lot of thoughts on it as well. At a certain point, I think this complaint, in addition to announcing, you know, what the settlement terms were, this, you know, nuisance level, it also points out that in Cleveland baseball's trademark filings that they basically say, hey, we don't know of any marks that are affiliated with this. They basically say that the Indians' trademark filings were misleading. A, maybe because of, you know, what is it like not what, Tony, maybe you can educate me on that. What's it called when you don't look it up in property laws? What is it? Nonfeasance or is it nonfeasance versus malfeasance?
I think it's nonfeasance.
Nonfeasance is just like putting your hands over your eyes and just saying, I'm not looking. And then like misfeasance is just like lying about something.
Yeah. So it's plausible almost, deniability is the alternative word.
Right. It's almost like twofold, right? So like they don't, I don't know. I think it was fair that they didn't conduct a Google search, right? So the other version is that they didn't conduct this interim business search that Tony mentioned. And then you have to ask yourself, okay, what's worse if you're trying to figure out for our law students here, like the mens rea, the culpable mindset, what's worse here that you didn't Google or that you Googled it, you did this interim business search, and you lied about it afterwards. And what's the motivation behind doing that? And then Tony, you'll know where I'm going with this. We spoke to an executive with a roller derby organization who explained, I go, how is it? So they're saying they Googled it. So they're saying they knew about this ahead of time. How is it possible that they would have continued on and just thought that they would have to pay $0? How is that possible? So I'm not a, you know, roller derby aficionado. I know Emily is, and I can get Emily's thoughts on it as well. But there is a history, two teams in particular. There's a team called Gotham. It's a roller derby team and Angel City. Those were two teams that were, you know, roller derby teams that existed in New Jersey, in California. And then after the fact, there were professional women's teams, I believe in the NWSL. So Emily, hopefully I'm not slandering your league.
I was going to say, I'm just waiting. Yes.
You know what, Emily, I'll give it to you. But the story goes that two NWSL teams, National Women's Soccer League teams, took and we'll say, you know, copied the names of these roller derby teams in the same market, and there was no compensation paid. Those aren't my words. Those are the words of, you know, the roller derby exec that we spoke with. So Emily, we'll put you in the head here of Cleveland Baseball HQ. You do your research, right? We're going to go in this world where you've Googled and you know that this exists. You run an interim business search that Tony did. Now, if you're doing all your due diligence and you're paid so much money, you probably also know this history of roller derby teams' names being stolen and paying $0. So Emily, I'll give it to you. I mean, like, don't you think that that's like a worse world that you just said, like, you know what? Screw him. Not going to pay him any money. These other roller derby teams got zero. This Guardian team's going to get squadoosh too.
I think that morally, ethically, you want to say, no, we would do the right thing. And we would, you know, we're going to be the different ones and we're going to pay the roller derby team what they're owed. But in reality, at the end of the day, although these are sports that we love, it's a business and these people are running a business. And the evidence suggests, you know, to use our little lawyer minds here, the evidence suggests that this can be done. And then if you look at, if I'm the general counsel for the Cleveland Indians, and I say, well, an organization, two teams within the NWSL, which doesn't make even a quarter of what the MLB makes, is able to get away with this scot-free. You know, well then why wouldn't we be able to do it? You know what, you know, and at the end of the day, they're the big business, the roller derby, my roller derby is the small business. And, you know, yeah, I think that it's the unfortunate reality, but I do think it's our reality, especially within the world of sport.
I apologize. I think Gotham is actually in New York, which I should know because of my
Gotham's in New York. Yep. And then Angel City's in California. Well,
to be fair,
although it's not out of the ordinary for New York teams to be in New Jersey, a la New York Jets and Giants.
And also this soccer team is the NJNW Gotham FC. So it's right. It wasn't so far. Right. The executive director at roller derby that we spoke with was Erica Vanstone. She's the executive director of the WFTDA, which is the Women's Roller Derby Association. So that was her reading of the situation, that either way you look at it, either you're incompetent for not Googling, or you're even worse, that like you just cut the corner here. So Tony, now let's turn it over to our last form, the settlement here. This is where I think the story lies. It's not the story at the end of the day, if the Dolans had to pay $5 million to this roller derby team, it's not that big of a deal. It's chump change for them. It's great for the roller derby team, which we can have a lot of fun with online, which we kind of already are. But the story is the mistake that was made in the negotiations in this case. You've known about this roller derby team, at least according to Roller Derby, in June, you know, or at least sometime prior to July 23rd. Now you settle the case in November, a day after your merchandise was pushed back. You have certainly the bad PR of people like us talking about it, maybe some lost jobs in the legal team. But Tony, you mentioned, and I'm not disagreeing with you at all, I think the website, social media, you know, this maybe really expensive legal fight over the trademark, that could have been worth eight figures, right? So I'm not sure, and they're never going to tell us how much they settled for here. But I think a grave mistake was made in terms of not ponying up a sufficient amount of money earlier. If the reports are true that $8,000 was offered, I mean, that's a way to poke the bear, right? I mean, that's a way to get the other side really pissed off. Go ahead, Tony.
Let me say this. I'm going to, just as Contact Judgmental was very much on the money that there was going to be a suit that ensued, I call that this was always going to end in some type of settlement, because as any law student knows, we've studied it in law school, Dan, 90% of cases always end in a settlement. That's just the way it goes. And I really think that, you know, if you do a cost benefit analysis of how this is all going down, you know, it's already the start of free agency. World Series is over. Qualifying offers are coming in for a lot of restricted free agents for players. So the offseason is about to kick underway. Winter meetings are coming. How embarrassing would it be for a Cleveland baseball team to not have officially launched their new name? I mean, think of all the factors. Forget the merch for a second. They now have to revamp their stadium to remove the Indians neon sign and put in a Guardians name. But what, they're going to call it Cleveland? Is that what they're going to do? They still have not procured the rights to any social media aliases that indicate that the Guardians are the new baseball team. I mean, it's just a legal headache, a PR headache, every type of headache. It only made sense for the baseball team to enter into a settlement with the roller derby team. You know, consciously, it provides them their remedy. And at the end of the day, like Dan said, you know, whatever the money was, it is chump change. They would rather spend that type of money than, you know, I don't know, paying, you know, whoever their star players actually don't even know anymore. They have like, so it's like Ahmed Rosario, because he was a Met and he totally sucked with the Mets. But it's like if they decided to pay Ahmed Rosario 2 years worth 30 mil, he's not worth it. But they would rather pay roller derby team whatever the money is just to get them off their back.
And we talk about this in a number of contexts, be it the Deshaun Watson context or you know, even you know, the John Gruden context, which we'll be talking about as well, I'm sure, over the course of the next couple of months. You have two real reasons why one files a lawsuit. Either A, it's a money grab, or B, you know, they're just trying to make an example, you know, and they want, you know, a pint of blood for some reason. So this is probably, I think, more towards being a money grab. I think the roller derby team wanted to get paid. I think they successfully made the Cleveland Indians look really dumb. But like, let's go through this. Let's say you're the, you know, you're the lawyer for an organization trying to settle this in the future, right? You know, and Tony, we'll talk kind of moving forward about how these two teams exist with one another, and they kind of have to. But at a certain point, you know, just like Washington football team is doing now, they've announced that they've narrowed down to like six finalists. Okay, and like, you know, they can pick one of these six. So let's say the Cleveland Indians did what Washington football team did a couple of weeks ago. And they said, we're narrowing it down to 10 teams. They did it publicly for whatever reason, which I'm not sure why they would do it, but they did it. And they said, Guardians, you know, Rockers, Spiders, some of these other names that Cleveland fans in my mentions have been talking about. At that point, you have a lot of leverage, right? Because you can say, you know what, you call up, you know, the Guardians roller derby general counsel, and you say, listen, you saw my tweet, right? Okay, I got in your radar. I'm looking at 10 names. All of them are pretty good names. I don't care which one I pick. I'm offering everybody identical offers of $8,000. And I use that number in particular because that's the number we know that the Dolans communicated. $8,000 to everyone. Take it or leave it. Whoever takes the $8,000 and gives us all their IP, they'll move on to the next round, you know, but we'll use one of those names. The mistake appears to have been made of just announcing the team name without having reached any type of settlement. At that point, whatever the leverage is has completely flipped on its head. So the story is not, hey, $5 million or whatever the number is was paid to the roller derby team. It's unexplainable why they would announce the name without coming to terms on that type of deal. And that's, you know, that's really the story here. How lawyers could let this go on for so long and not do anything about it. And they look terrible. So if you want to figure out, you know, and Tony, why you mentioned this is going to go down the sports law history books and the IP history books, it's a name that was just colossally botched. You have decades of tradition in this Indians name, and you want to set off this new era of Cleveland Guardians baseball. And it's now just such a stink, you know, such a bad taste in our mouth. Like, you guys botches, like welcome to the era. And you like walk in, you make this grand entrance, like you're Stone Cold Steve Austin making your grand entrance in the Royal Rumble. And it's almost like you trip over the mat and fall flat on your face immediately. And that's what people will remember. So I don't know, that's my sense of it. Now, Tony, you know, I guess the final chapter, you know, in this, you mentioned it, what I think we'll probably find out. There's some type of coexistence agreement. The joint statement between these two organizations is that there will be two Cleveland Guardians. So we talked about a little bit offline, you know, in order to have some type of coexistence, you have to have the teams agreeing to play ball. You have to have the basically a stipulation discontinuance in the lawsuit, and the USPTO's office, they're going to have to agree, you know, not to fight this anything. So I'll give it to you. Tell us about our unholy alliance between the Cleveland Guardians and the Cleveland Guardians.
So the word of the day is coexistence agreement, or the words of the day are coexistence agreement. And that I think is going to be, that I think is the heart of the settlement between roller derby and baseball team. So generally speaking, coexistence agreements take place when two marks that are similar, either by word or design or a combination of both, can exist in the same universe if, let's say, both marks were the subject of an infringement suit or potentially an infringement suit. So one example that comes to mind, anybody who is familiar with, let's say, the Walgreens logo, the W logo, there was a lawsuit with Wegmans over the same design of the W, how it had that specific cursive look. I believe it ended in a settlement, but what's interesting probably, and what probably happened was Wegmans and Walgreens probably had some type of coexistence agreement. Now, why would a coexistence agreement exist in the first place for something like that? They both are in some type of a similar space. They both have their own version of a retail store. Pharmaceutical goods are sold in both stores. So it could cause some type of consumer confusion, but there could be a world where both of their designs could coexist. Think of Dove chocolate versus Dove soap, kind of the same thing. Both are identical, but one is in bath products and the other is in chocolates, you know, and they exist in the same universe. And you know that when you're saying, I'm hungry, can I get a Dove bar? You're not talking about a Dove soap bar. You're talking about an actual chocolate bar. So I think what's pivotal here is that both marks are likely going to proceed case, you know, status quo, no disputes with Cleveland Guardians roller derby team and with baseball team. Usually when a mark is approved by a trademark examiner, it then gets published into the USPTO Gazette for potential opposition by other mark owners. We can safely assume that there will not be any opposition since there has been a settlement. And, you know, probably the terms of this coexistence agreement are that both marks will live in the USPTO. Both are responsible for renewing their marks as is, like any other mark owner would. And that even though they both are in the sports space, they both can have the Cleveland Guardians name, but one is in the service of providing baseball entertainment and the other is providing roller derby entertainment. So I think we don't know how much this cost. We don't know like the exact terms of it, you know, otherwise, but that is the general nature of a coexistence agreement. And I think that it's really important to stress that in a situation like this with roller derby and Cleveland Guardians baseball team, that this really was the only formidable solution. I called it. This was supposed to happen. I think this had to happen because let me put it to you this way. You think that Cleveland baseball team is going to abandon the Guardians name after they probably spent millions of dollars to get Tom Hanks to narrate the name change? No way. That was never going to happen. I'm telling you that as a fact.
But here's the thing. And then Emily, I want to get your thoughts on this. Like the Cleveland Guardians, I should say the Cleveland Indians, they spend so much capital on, hey, we're announcing the schedule and had Guardians on it. You know, we hired Tom Hanks. You know, we put all this merchandise together. They certainly put the cart before the horse. And if I was the general counsel, right, for the roller derby team, I would say, right, like you guys had to delay your launch nationwide for merchandise. We have you. We hold all the cards here, right? Probably on day one from selling a merchandise, you would have probably made $10 million. So you know what? Cut us a check for 50, right? And I would have worked from that standpoint. Oh, this is all pennies on the dollar for the Dolans. They need to do this, right? Could they have picked another name? And that's why I'm happy to stay. I said on the record, I'll stand by it. As of yesterday, I could not rule out that the Indians would have to change their name because they had to pick one of two things here. Either they were going to cave to the pressure and just say, you know what? We messed up. We'll pay the roller derby team and we'll pay them a lot more than we could have before. Or they could have just, you know, thumbed their nose at the whole situation and said, you know what? We'd rather not pay a roller derby team $5 million. We would rather spend more money switching to the spider. So those were the only two options. So it was either, you know, switch the name, fight this thing in court, you know, for years, or settle. So they picked the obvious option that was staring them in the face the entire time. So Emily, I think this is a good time to give a moral of the story as we're wrapping this up, right? Roller derby, I think, a masterclass really in applying pressure here and forcing the Indians to change their position. So we can all make fun of the Indians, but let's put a light really on the hero of this story. Roller derby, right? They went from being ignored to getting a paycheck, right? Well, they're going to pretend to, we don't know how much was disclosed, but certainly they secured some type of large bag.
A substantial paycheck. And really, Dan, you know, you asked for the moral of the story is never underestimate a roller derby team. I mean, I know I'm a fangirl, but never underestimate them, and all power to these guys. They did a good job coming out of this with a big old check.
I put a poll up on social media of that over under $1 million on the settlement. I thought that was a fair number. 75% say it's over $1 million. I could probably do a follow-up, but we'll probably never know. We will know maybe if that roller derby team goes on to win 20 consecutive roller derby championships. And then we know.
A lot of money. That's right. Exactly.
Right, Dan. Hopefully by 2042, like your Instagram post says, maybe we'll know by then, but we'll see.
Tony, let me give it to you for final thoughts. We obviously covered a lot, but I think it's an important analysis of a story that will go down in our sports law textbooks. What's your final thoughts on this case?
Final thoughts. It clearly a David and Goliath story in every sense of the word. I really think that, you know, at the end of the day, it seems like both parties are happy, but, you know, at the cost of, I'm not sure if Emily or you, Dan, said it, but at the cost of, you know, jobs being lost in the legal office for a Cleveland baseball team. So certainly that happened. But you know what? This is a good sample for Washington football team, which is the only other sports team now on the market that's tentatively changing their trademark name to something else. This is a good case study for them to observe and literally scrutinize every little layer when it comes to registering a trademark, doing a search, and not being mamby-pamby about it. Literally making sure that they have dotted their I's and crossed their T's, because if they haven't, this is going to replicate and it's just going to feed itself over and over and over and over again. And for anybody who is interested in pursuing a career in intellectual property, specifically trademarks, study this. Go to Westlaw or LexisNexis, whatever is your choice. Go find the complaint, read it through, read the news stories, just study it from soup to nuts, because if you want to see the prima facie case of a good, solid trademark infringement case, albeit whether it was going to be a win or a loss for either side, it smells, feels, tastes like a really, really good trademark infringement case. And that's why I love the story from day one. I was in love with it from day one with the name change, because I thought it was very fascinating how just the whole scenario of registering a trademark for a new sports team, I just found it fascinating. But now, you know, entered the player Cleveland Guardians roller derby team, and it just made things a heck of a lot more interesting. So that's my final two cents on the whole thing.
Well, Tony, thank you for joining us. Certainly great conversation, and I'll see you in class, buddy.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Tony.
So a little bit behind baseball, no pun intended. This was supposed to be maybe a shorter conversation that we wove into a later podcast. But what happened was, you know, you got to adapt on the fly. We had the settlement that occurred this morning, and we said, you know what? Let's dedicate a full episode to it. It's been our story. Let's own it. You know, it's certainly a story I've presented on at law schools around the country. It's just a really interesting concept. You know, so you don't have to be a fan of intellectual property to understand the mistakes that were made by Cleveland baseball. So Jason, you mentioned it at the top, right? Like, what really occurred here? Did the Cleveland, you know, Indians, did they not know that the roller derby team existed, or did they know about it and decide to cut some corners and try to save a couple bucks and say, you know what? No one pays roller derby teams in the past for stealing names. We're not going to do it either. I don't know. I don't know if this our interview changed your mind, but which one are you leaning towards?
In the beginning, I was leaning towards this was a deliberate action here, that they didn't think it was a real threat, that it was a small roller derby team who was not really in operation and who wouldn't dare to come after them. But just looking at how much of a headache this has become, and looking at kind of the case law that you guys have cited in similar situations in the past, that kind of allude to the opinion that you can't really just assume that a smaller organization can't pose a threat to you. I think it was oversight. I think this was really just a miss, that they truly just didn't catch this. And that's not what I thought in the beginning. And that is what you have been saying this whole time. I'm finally coming around. I think they just screwed it up.
I've always thought there was a mistake that was made. I didn't know how big it was. I'm not an intellectual property professor. I dip my toe in the water when it intersects with sports. But we've had Josh Gervin on this podcast, another good follow on social media, and we had Tony on. And both kind of pointed out mistakes were made here at a very baseline level. So Tony gave a prediction. He gave a number. Assuming this case didn't settle, he thinks there was about a 30% chance of the Cleveland Guardians roller derby team winning and basically not allowing Cleveland baseball to proceed with the name. So that's Tony. Tony's take Tony's word for it, right? Tony is an IP professor, you know, the same law school I teach at, but he's not the only one that's saying that. No one is out here saying that Cleveland baseball didn't make any mistakes. But if you really think there's a 30% chance that there's some entity out there that could totally mess everything up, pull the trademark from you. And this is why I was saying, I at no point before today could I ever rule out that the Indians weren't going to change the Spiders or something else, because I mean, they didn't want to pay a roller derby team in the first place. But if the roller derby team won this trademark battle and basically, you know, sent them had the right to send a cease and desist, you know, to Cleveland baseball and say, you're not allowed to operate with that name, that's our trademark. You know, insane that would have been. So, you know, it's just kind of like the cojones on Cleveland baseball to say, you know what? We're not going to pay you a dime and you're going to eat it and you're just going to sit there and take it because we're Cleveland baseball. And all the credit, and Emily talked about it, but all the credit to the roller derby team hiring a really legitimate law firm. You know, they didn't hire us, which I put out there that I would have been willing to take that case. Certainly we gave them enough publicity, but they hired a real law firm. I don't know if they hired him, and people were saying, like, was there a chance that Cleveland Indians just kind of priced the Guardians out and they like kind of, you know, spent them into oblivion? I'm like, I don't know. If the law firm took the case on a contingency, this case could have been really fought in the courtroom. This was not just like a sham complaint they filed. They looked ready to fight this. So my sense of it, again, I put a poll out. I truthfully think that this case settled in the seven figures. You know, I just think that amount, and if it didn't, maybe that was maybe short-sighted on the roller derby team. I think they could have got a lot of money for this. 30% chance that they wouldn't have a trademark, if you want to buy Tony's word. They had all the leverage here, right? So I don't know, Jason, we'll never find out. What are your predictions on the amount of money that this was entailed? I have my sense of it.
I'm willing to take the over on that. I mean, the over is probably sitting at, if we're talking over under $1 million, maybe the over is at plus 200. I'm willing to take those odds on it. You know, even if it is a 30% chance that this could have been troublesome in court for the Indians, that's obviously a chance they cannot take, and why the settlement is a clear choice there. I mean, if it's a 5% chance, the Indians probably settle too. They can't afford to take this kind of risk. And it kind of brings me back to the pure oversight versus the deliberate lack of care. Maybe they were just so distracted by, if you remember, you know, at the time of the name change and the reason why they did it, you know, out of respect for the Native American community and all the backlash they had received over the Wahoo logo, maybe they were just so distracted by all that they just picked a seemingly safe, innocent name, the Guardians, and let's just move on and wrap it all up. And then it opened up the whole new can of worms here. So maybe they were just totally distracted.
Well, here's the thing, and this didn't get that much publicity, but I tweeted it out, like somebody sent it to me. But if you just look at what the Guardians logo is, it's the genesis of it is like these bridge statues that are, I guess, around Cleveland. If you look at the bridge statues, they look have like they have some Native American tie-ins, and there was a Native American community that said this term Guardians is a Native American concept. So like, you know, it's just like facepalm emoji over and over. It's like, well, who wants this name, right? So like Spiders, Rockers, I keep seeing 100 different names. So it's like the comments, which I think are so funny on Twitter, it's like, you guys messed up a name change of a name that no one wanted. So maybe you should cut your losses and pick a new name, which obviously they're not going to do. But, you know, I wasn't just saying it, say it. I think the Indians just mishandled this on the PR level, on a legal handle. Fine. This chapter is now in the past of how they bungled the name change. But like, you know, this is the era of Cleveland Guardians baseball. It's not necessarily, you know, a ringing endorsement for what's to come here.
As a Minnesota Twins fan, you know, this bungling has not been something that I'm upset to see, as my division foe is really struggling here. And maybe the roller derby team is tampering their free agent abilities here. I know they signed Eddie Rosario off my squad last year, so hopefully their spending decreases a bit here.
We shall see. And I think it's an important lesson as we close this episode up. Certainly a number of teams around the country, you know, not that I'm necessarily the woke police, but there is a community out there that is trying to go after anything and everything that has Native American imagery, be it, you know, the Florida State Seminoles or the Atlanta Braves, Tomahawk Chop. I think you'd be smart. You learn a lesson from this situation. You have a backup name in place, number one, but hire some competent lawyers that know how to handle when you do pick a name, you know, that they know how to swiftly move on to the next stage of the process. So certainly a lot of lessons to be learned. So again, as we put the steps on the books, let me remind everyone, this podcast is sponsored by Themis Bar Review. Basically, these guys are giving us the keys to the kingdom. $1,000 off. Themisbar.com/condetrimental, normally $2,500. They have some discount codes, but they're giving us the super duper discount code, $1,000 off if you sign up through our handle. So that'll put this in the books. Certainly we have more to come this week, but Jason, Excellent job, buddy. Thank you for sitting in and listening to that lovely conversation. Jason is on social media at Jason_Morin. Dan Wallach is on social media at Wallach Legal. Myself, Dan Lust at Sports All Lust. The show at Con Detrimental. And as Jason mentioned, we have tons of articles up on our website, conductdetrimental.com. For Jason, myself, and the Conduct Detrimental family, we will see you next week on another episode of Conduct Detrimental.